Hello and welcome to the Everything is Black and White podcast. It is the Monday show on Wednesday with myself, Andrew Musgrove and Aaron Stokes. We are here after Newcastle's 1-1 draw with Everton. We will look at how Newcastle dropped two valuable points rather in the race for Europe, how Lewis Hall and Dan Byrne impressed, and what comes next for Newcastle United. This is the Everything is Black and White podcast. Please hit like, subscribe and leave us a rating and review. Aaron, a slightly different feeling coming into this episode than there was on Monday. How are you feeling about the result with Everton now that a few hours have passed?
Oh, I'd love to rewind to Monday and relive that fantastically positive Monday show again rather than the very deflated show that I imagine is about to be forthcoming. I think deflated's the right word. I went into that game thinking that on paper Newcastle should really come away with 3 points against an Everton team that hadn't won the Premier League since mid-December. Caveat, of course, that you know Newcastle were essentially playing their cup team, but I think on the balance of power, I think Newcastle United should have came away with 3 points, and I think you're right that it's two dropped rather than one gained. And I suspect from the little chatter we've had in the office today, I suspect we're going to disagree about a couple of things in this podcast, which always makes for good listening. So I'm looking forward to that. That's the silver lining.
It's the bedrock of the Monday show, isn't it? It'd be boring if we agreed on everything. We are coming live on Facebook and YouTube, so thank you for everyone who is joining, including Les, who says, I didn't expect this. I don't know if she's talking about
the show or the match.
Or the results, who knows? But we will persevere, we will go on. I've got to say, with me, there's more of a feeling of apathy rather than anything else. I am disappointed, but there was a sort of, oh well, like it wasn't a surprise that Everton got back in the game. I think my kind of conclusion was this is just Newcastle United of this season. And I doubt I'm the only one. It's a bit of a strange feeling though, given the fact that European qualification is still very much on the cards. But if you're going to get European football this season, despite everything, you have to be beating teams like Everton at home.
Yeah, you do. And like I say, going into the game, I felt a weird sense of confidence, which I should have known only leads to one thing, and that's being let down by this Newcastle United team. But there is excuses, and I think I'm probably going to be the one playing devil's advocate today. I was looking around that team last night, and that you know it was a cup team. 5 or 6 or 7 players who would not usually be starting for Newcastle United. Subs come off the bench in some cases who should not or would not be coming off the bench for Newcastle United. But look, yeah, I think on the whole, Everton, with their form under the light at St James's Park, it should have been an absolute nailed-on win. Again, to play devil's advocate, zoom out and you've taken 4 points from West Ham and Everton. You would have probably taken that this time a week ago.
But is that enough for European qualification?
Look, I think if they go and get a result at Fulham, it's actually been a really, really good week. I think this result in isolation is poor. It's poor because of the manner of the game, the fact that Newcastle should really have been out of sight. And Eddie Howe last night when we were speaking to him, we all felt really deflated in the press room last night, and you got that feeling of, you know, that feels like a defeat. Eddie Howe came out and saw it completely differently, or at least he said to us he did. He said, you know, I don't feel the negative now. I'm very happy with the performance. I'm very happy with the way we played. I'm very happy with the way we controlled the game for large parts. The result is obviously disappointing, but he had no gripe with the performance. And I think on the balance, apart from maybe, you know, not scoring a few chances that they really should have, Newcastle played well, better team, defended well. But really, it was that lack of clinical edge, which we've come to see from Everton in the last couple of months, which, you know, bit Newcastle on the backside last night.
Well, that is my biggest frustration, that Newcastle didn't take their chances. And as you say, they had the chances. So a more positive fan may argue that it's fine margins. They take one of those chances, the Isak chance, the Murphy chance, it's a win for Newcastle. But is it as simple as that? Or do we have to look back to what we said on Monday, that they beat West Ham at the death, but it was shocking for 70 minutes, and it painted over the cracks. And again, you think a win last night, again, may have done the same. Is it as simple to say as they missed a few chances on any other day, they would have won that game, and we look ahead to Fulham on the back of two wins?
Just to offer you another question before I answer that, if Newcastle had won that game last night 1-0, if the penalty hadn't been given, Newcastle had won it, would you have seen it as a good performance?
Yeah, I still think there would have been areas of it where you go, not brilliant, but yeah, I wouldn't have had too many complaints. Yeah. I think though, we're at the stage of the season now, and I mentioned this on Monday's episode, where I've kind of just resigned myself to the fact They're going to get overrun in midfield.
Yeah.
They're going to get caught out at the back, but they're also going to score goals. And that's just where I am. You know, that needs to improve, and the summer they need to rectify that, whether that's through tactical switch, whether that's through player sales, what have you. It'll change when players get back from injury. But I've kind of just accepted now we're not going to see the Newcastle of last season.
Yeah, I agree, but I think there's a whole load of reasons for that. And one is, look at the team he put out last night. You've got a back five that have never played together this season and very likely will not play, you know, together beyond the next couple of games once everyone's back fit. You've got a goalkeeper who, just for the life of him, cannot keep clean sheets, although I thought Dubravka did okay last night. A midfield that, again, you know, has very rarely played together, Bruno, Anderson and Longstaff. Players that clearly are not fit in Hall and Anderson, and even Barnes to an extent. Willock doesn't look fit. Longstaff's playing through the pain. Of course, this isn't going to be the Newcastle United of all. This isn't going to be the, you know, barnstorm and brilliant, fantastic side that we saw last year. But I actually think the performance on the whole last night was much better than West Ham. And yet we're coming away from it, you know, thinking actually that it was really, really negative. I think it was a good showing.
Because of where the two sides lie, you know, Everton hadn't won in the Premier League, still haven't won since mid-December. They now have, I think, broken the record for the longest winless run in their history. They're not a good side, but they disrupted Newcastle really, really well. But you should be beating Everton at home, despite mm-hmm. the injuries. And I think you're right, you know, of course, the mitigating circumstances are the players that they're missing. But the fact is, they still created enough chances in that game to win it and win it comfortably. And they didn't take their chances. And that's the biggest frustration, because clearly the players that they are playing, okay, they may not have played together many times, or if at all, they might not be super duper match fit, but they're still good enough. They're still creating the chances to win games, and they're not taking those chances. And we're running out of games for them to take the chances and get Newcastle into Europe. And I think we may look back on this game, as good as the performance was up to a certain stage, as good as you can say, hey, look, any other day Pickford doesn't save it, any other day Isak puts that in the back of the net and Braithwaite doesn't get a head onto it, whatever, this might be the game that cost Newcastle a European place potentially.
See, I'm gonna opt for the more positive view, and I think it's another point picked up. It's four from the last two games. Beat Fulham, and 7 points in a week is a fantastic return. Yes, in isolation, it's a really disappointing result, and that is, you know, enhanced by the way they lost it with such a needless foul at the end and such a, you know, a dominant display for a good hour until Everton started really turning the screw in the last 15-20 minutes. But look, I think I'm going to be the more positive out of the two of us today.
That's all right. We need a balance. I just think when you haven't got the ability to change the game from the bench, and anyhow didn't have that against Everton, when you are creating these chances, and there were a few, as I said, you know, Isak had one cleared off the line, Jacob Murphy had one saved by Pickford, they hit the bar from a corner, Harvey Barnes flashed one wide. When you have these chances presented to you, and you know that you haven't got someone off the bench to change the game, you have to put these chances away. So when you do make the changes, it's not a game-winning change, because you haven't got that. And I just think they were very wasteful in front of goal. And people will say, look, great save, unlucky, hit the bar, yes. But I'm with the camp that say we've really got to be putting at least one of those away to make it 2-0.
They had the chances to win the game, more than enough. They had plenty. And yes, Pickford had a very, very good game. I thought he handled the pressure really well. But Newcastle, on the balance of play, should have won it. And I actually think the second goal from Dan Burn, when it goes in, when that's overturned, I think that is the game-changing moment, because that momentum that Newcastle had swung the other way, and all of a sudden Everton had their tails up. And he's thought from that moment, that was the moment where actually Newcastle lost their grip of the game a little bit. If that goal is allowed and Isak's onside, you know, I think Newcastle win that 2-3-0. I don't think there's any way Everton come back. That was the real changing moment of it. Also, the fact, as you've mentioned, that Newcastle had very limited options to change it. Obviously, Willock comes on for Anderson, who was looking leggy. Willock himself didn't look, you know, up to scratch. Hall comes off with fatigue for Paul Dummett, who's played 5 minutes of football since the last time he completed a 90. Everton, on the other hand, you know, they bring on the likes of Calvert-Lewin, they bring on Gomez, they bring on James Garner, who changed the game in midfield. They had real options to change it, and it's just something that Newcastle aren't blessed with at the minute, as has been well documented.
Do you think the fact that we're sitting here, and for the majority, I think the fan base will say we were the better side,
yeah,
but we drew, and I said at the start, actually, in a little slip that it was 3 points dropped. And I think some people do look upon it as it feels like that. And the fact that you've dominated that game, you're against a side you should be beating, terrible form, you know, potentially going to be relegated. Does it feel like a defeat in the dressing room, do you think? Is it going to be hard for Eddie Howe to pick the players up for Fulham?
Well, look, I hope not. Newcastle, as we touched on it on the last couple of podcasts, have really struggled to string results together. And that was why going into last night, after such a great win Saturday, a great comeback, you wanted Newcastle just out the gates. It was pretty much the same team that finished Saturday's game starting last night. You wanted them to just steamroll Everton. And in the early stages, they actually thought that was going to happen because they were on top of them, looked slick in attack. Barnes was linking up fantastically well with Anderson and Isak. And for whatever reason, you know, whether it's Pickford's fantastic saves, whether it's them being wasteful, whether it's the bad luck, they didn't take advantage of that, of the domination that they had in that first half. The second half, from pretty much minute one, you saw it wasn't the same Newcastle coming out after.
They lost that intensity.
Yeah, they had. And it wasn't. And, I mean, I think they were still on top of the game until, as I say, the second goal was disallowed. But they just didn't kill Everton off. And I think if they had got that second goal, there's no way. Because Everton were really toothless for a good 70 minutes last night.
They were. But the question I just asked about picking the players up, the reason I ask it is because we keep coming back to this topic of belief within the squad. And a lot of people on social media, a lot of people that I saw after the game, and a lot of people in the comments here as well watching live have said Everton just had more belief than Newcastle United. Mm. And as the game won, you could see they were believing more. They were doing really well and disrupting Newcastle. They were bringing the battle to them in physicality, and they were winning that battle. And when Isak missed the chance, which was cleared off the line, I turned the chat beside me and I thought, Everton are going to get a goal here, because it just felt like one of those games where you miss chance after chance. You've had one ruled out. You're not making the dominance pay. It just felt like it was set up for Everton to get an equaliser, and they did in the end. But it was down to belief. They just seemed to believe in themselves a little bit more. Maybe, you know, they haven't got too much to lose. You know, the odds are against them because of the points deduction and what have you. But yeah, there was. I do think there was a big gap in belief as that second half went on.
I think, just to put myself in the shoes of some of these players, you know, for example, Paul Dummett, Emil Kraft, Lewis Hall to an extent. Are you, or even the bigger players, are you looking around that dressing room and thinking, there's no Kieran Trippier, there's no Joe Linton, there's no Nick Pope, there's no Sven Botman, there's no Jamal Lascelles, no Callum Wilson, there's really big players missing here. And instead, you've got players like Emil Kraft, who has not played much football. Dummett's coming on. Lewis Hall is working his way back to fitness. Willock, Anderson, Harvey Barnes have all had long periods out. Is that the reason for there not being for the Leaf? Because they haven't played together? They're missing too many players? They've had an absolute stinker collectively of a season. Yes, it's all well and good us sitting here saying they need to believe that they can qualify for Europe. On what evidence, really, are they going to qualify for Europe? They can't string results together. Their injuries just continue to pile up. I don't think you can really blame them for not having that belief that we saw last season where everything fell their way.
But they've got to have the belief they can beat in Everton, haven't they? They've got to feel like they can do it.
But I think they did for large chunks of that game. I don't think I was looking at that performance goal and they don't believe yet. They were the better side. They created a lot of chances. They looked like they were going to win that game. And they didn't. I don't think you can look at that team and think, and they weren't believing last night.
I would hope those players that you've mentioned there, okay, they look at it and think, we haven't got these key players, but I would hope they'd look at the situation and go, I'm going to step up here.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I know we haven't spoken about Dummett yet, but just me personally, and I know that people listening to this or watching this won't agree with me here, but Paul Dummett has came in last night, right, and came on, and enforced changed. He's played 1 minute against Sunderland, 4 minutes against Chelsea, and 2 90-minute minutes as well before Christmas. That's all he's played this season. He makes a terrible mistake, right? It's an awful foul. I don't know what he's doing. He gives away a penalty. And then he leaves the game and goes on social media and sees people calling him for him to never play for the club ever again. You know, some of the stuff that has been written and said about him in the last 24 hours is disgusting. If he then has to come in on Saturday because Emil Kraft or Fabian Scher or Dan Byrne picks up a knock, do you think he's going to have belief? I wouldn't. I would be absolutely cacking my pants thinking, you know, what if I make a mistake here? And I think we've seen it with Sean Longstaff this season, who just looks like he's the most nervous player ever. Dan Byrne had 3 months of constantly getting pelters. Kieran Trippier, there's no wonder that his form was so shaky over Christmas because he makes that mistake at Chelsea away and he's absolutely crucified for it. And I just think Dummett especially must be thinking today, if I play on Saturday, you know, the amount of pressure on him is ridiculous.
There's a balance, because though. Of the fans. There's a balance, though, because you can sit and you can criticise that mistake.
Yeah, and you can critique it. It was I can sit here now and I'm not gonna defend Paul Dummett's performance last night, but anybody could have made that mistake, you know. And let's call it that. It was a mistake. He fouled Ashley Young. He shouldn't. He gave away a penalty. He must be gutted. But the overreaction to it is absolutely ridiculous from so-called fans for a local lad. I just can't understand. So we're sat here talking about confidence and belief. If you're Sean Longstaff, Dan Byrne or Paul Dummett, there's no wonder that you're not confident because there's so much scrutiny on you at the minute, rightly or wrongly, and I just think last night was case in point.
I do think Paul Dummett was thrown into a really unfair situation. For me, I would have brought Alex Murphy on, who's played football in the youth ranks. Paul Dummett hasn't. He's just been training week in, week out, no doubt putting the top effort in, but to bring him on in that scenario I think was really unfair. So yes, he's the one who's committed that horrendous foul in the box. I think WrestleMania's in a couple of weeks, so would have been more apt to see it on screen there. But I don't actually blame him in a way, because I don't think Eddie Howe should have put him in that position, and I think Eddie Howe's probably gone for experience over youth, which is fine. It's his prerogative. Again, he sees them day in, day out, so he's done that on what he's seen. But I still think Alex Murphy would have been the better option because he's got the pace. We've seen him go forward. He looks much more confident on the ball. And that mistake aside from Paul Dummett yesterday, and granted, what I'm talking about comes after the mistake, but every time he got the ball, it was like the Paul Dummett of old. So I don't know if people agree with me, but there was a time when Paul Dummett did really well. Then there was a few seasons when he was pretty bad. Then he had a kind of a rebirth where he looked much more confident. He looked like a really solid defender. Yesterday, when he had the ball at his feet, he looked like the Paul Dummett of old, who didn't want to cross the halfway line. Mm. Wasn't confident in his ability to take the ball forward. Again, not necessarily his fault. He hasn't played a lot of football. I don't think throwing him into that situation was very helpful at all.
I just think, again, to play devil's advocate, if Eddie Howe has obviously picked Paul Dummett for the experience. Alex Murphy looks a fantastic talent. He looks like he's going to have a very bright future, but he's played a handful of minutes for the senior team across his career. He's only, what, 18, 19? If Howe brings Alex Murphy on instead of Paul Dummett, and Alex Murphy brings Ashley Young down like that, or Alex Murphy doesn't stop the cross and Ashley Young heads it in, do you not think there'll be fans here sitting? Why did he not bring Dummett on? Why did he not bring the experienced head? Remember what Dummett did at City and Man United? How good he was. Why didn't he bring him on instead of thinking? You can't have it both ways.
I don't agree. I think Eddie Howe, in many ways, has a free pass with the injury crisis right now, because I don't think people would be on his back if he introduced Alex Murphy into the game, if he introduced Amadou Diallo, Ben Parkinson. Look, these kids are raw. They've not had much first-team experience at all. But I think a lot of people would look more favourably on bringing on a player who has that potential, who has got that spark, who's got the pace and has got the ability to run about a little bit, rather than a Paul Dummett or Matt Ritchie. So no, I don't think Eddie Howe would be criticised if he went for youth over experience.
But that's fair enough. That's your opinion. I'm not sure I agree. But I mean, that just is not Eddie Howe's playbook.
Well, I know that.
How many minutes has he given to Parkinson this season, who I think he's played at Bournemouth, and that's it. Alex Murphy looked really good in pre-season, just like Bonswell did the season before, and then they don't get the minutes in the first
team. Is the point not, like, Eddie Howe is now, he's pretty much been backed into a corner, and I agree with you. We are very unlikely, I think, to see many minutes for Diallo, Parkinson, even Murphy to an extent. I don't think they'll see much of him towards the end of the season, even though the scenario kind of needs it.
Yeah, and as you say, there's no, is pressure the right word? There's, if Eddie Howe was to pick those players, you know, he does sort of have a free pass.
I think there's an expectation that it would be all right to do that because of what he's been dealt with in the injury room. And my question is, what is more effective, you know, an Anthony Gordon or a Sean Longstaff running on empty, running next to zero, or a young lad coming on for 20 minutes who's got legs about him, who's got energy about him, who can make a difference? They're on that first team bench for a reason. Mm-hmm. I know that the production from the youth level hasn't been like a conveyor belt that we'd all love it to be, but these players hopefully have got big futures ahead of them, if not at Newcastle, elsewhere, Championship, Premier League. They're there for a reason. Hey, you know, if you're good enough, what does it matter how old you are? You know, and now is probably the perfect time to say, do you know what? I haven't got many options to get to change the game. Paul Dump hasn't got the pace. Alex Murphy has. I'm going to put Alex Murphy on, give him a go. Why not?
Yeah, I agree with you. And look, I think even just to go one step further, and this is probably taking it to even more of an extreme, but if you're not going to play Ben Parkinson, Amadou Diallo, Alex Murphy, who are on the cusp of the first team, bring Trayvon Tanusi up. Bring Alfie Harrison up. You've signed these players from Birmingham and Manchester City for a reason. Yes, they're playing youth football, but, I mean, Lewis Miley's younger than, well, one of them, and he's playing week in, week out. There's clearly really talented players in the youth setup that we aren't seeing, and as we say, Eddie Howe, it's not his style really at Newcastle to give a boatload of chances to these youngsters in the Premier League. But as we say, if not now, then when?
Yeah.
The end of the season, when you know, they're out of the Europe race? I don't know.
I just think, you know, if you play Harvey Barnes, for instance, on Saturday against Fulham, you've got Anthony Gordon as well, Jacob Murphy, you know, you've got three wingers for two positions. You know, you're going to have tired legs out there. Anderson, another one, as you've mentioned, they can't be match fit. There is now a perfect time to play these players, you know, obviously in the right position. So Alex Murphy in defence, what have you. Now is the time. No one's going to criticise Eddie Howe if he does it. No one's going to criticise the lads if they make a mistake here or there. But unfortunately, senior pros who come on who are past their best are more likely to get the abuse thrown at them. I don't condone it at all, but that's going to happen. And I think these youngsters would be given a free pass, you know, if it didn't go to plan. But as you say, it's very unlikely, I think, that we'll see any of them really get too many minutes, which is a shame, but that is the Eddie Howe way. Let's stick with, let's move on to some positives, because there was one overwhelming positive from last night. Dan Burn.
Yeah.
Absolutely really colossal at the back. And finally, Eddie Howe plays him at centre-back. We've been calling it for quite a while. And he looked absolutely superb. Got some stats for you. 6 clearances, 4 tackles, won 4 out of 6 ground duels, 11 out of 17 aerial duels, 83 touches of the ball, which second only to Bruno. Highest pass completion rate with 91%. Absolutely brilliant.
He was fantastic last night. Really, really vocal when Newcastle didn't have the ball as well. He was shepherding that back line up and down all night. Fantastic in the air, fantastic on the ground. You know, he kept better quiet all half. He did really well with Calvert-Lewin, who obviously only managed to get that goal from the penalty spot. Really, really assured, composed performance. Eddie Howe was asked, you know, after the game about Dan Burn, and he said, he found as a player, Eddie Howe, that moving from full-back to centre-back was always easier than going the other way. And look, I think there's it begs the question now that, look, Dan Burn, staying fit, touching wood, is going to play there between now and the end of the season. They haven't really got any other options. It now begs the question is what they do next season. Eddie Howe last night admitted that, you know, they were going to have to try and sign a central defender because of the injuries to Lascelles and Botman. Do you now then go out and sign a really top-class centre-back, someone who's going to walk into that team regardless? Or do you say, actually, right, well, let's focus the attention on signing a top-class left-back and move Dan Burn back into the centre, whether that's as a starter or as backup? Look, these are questions for the summer, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but on last night's performance, he was really, really good, and I'm delighted for him personally.
Yeah, great captain's performance. When the goal was ruled out for offside, he was the one that was reacting and trying to, you know, let's keep going. Great leadership, and I'm just so looking forward to him having a run of games at centre back, because again, similar to Paul Dummett, I felt him playing at left back, and I know him personally, I think, feels he can be a left back, it's where he wants to play.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt it was leaving him a little bit hung out to dry slightly, because pacey wingers just had the beating of him pretty much day in, day out. And it's centre back. He can't handle his height. He's very good in the air. And as we've seen here, he looks much more comfortable on the ball. I mean, the stats show he's much more comfortable on the ball because he's not face down with someone running directly at him, or he's not looking over his shoulder. He's got the ball. He can take his time, go left, go right, go forward. He's got a bit of space to run into without anyone stepping on his toes. Every element of his game was better at centre-back. Every element. I was very impressed.
He looked a lot more confident at centre-back, didn't he? And I think, if anything, that's what Dan Bird needs, is just a run of games in a position where he feels very confident. Get a few of these performances under the belt. Try and, you know, right the wrongs of the last couple of months where he's been under the spotlight heavily. And I think the spotlight will get taken off him when he goes to centre-back because, as you say, he's not going to get caught out as many times one-on-one where, you know, I mean, how many times over the last couple of months did we see teams actively trying to exploit that left channel of Newcastle? Really good last night. One of the really big positives, I thought. Mm.
And Lewis Hall was the other positive. I mean, he seemed to play on through an abdominal injury, but as I said, he just came off because of fatigue. Another one who looks really assured on the ball. He doesn't panic when he's got it, when he needs to clear it. He's still playing them nice sort of short passes out. Good in the sliding challenge. And strong as well. There was a few moments where I was like, wow, he is strong. He had a few Everton players right on his back, but he, you know, shoulders strong, and he didn't let himself get bullied by the Everton players who are big guys. I thought a really shoot performance by Lewis Hall.
Yeah, good performance. I think there is elements of his game that are still clearly so raw, but that's obviously to be, you know, expected for someone so young with such little game time this season. But positive-wise, I mean, as you say there, he looks strong as an ox. He's very tenacious. You know, he works hard when he's lost the ball or when he's trying to get it back. He gives the opposition no time. Weirdly, for someone so small, he's really good in the air. He wins a lot of headers that you don't think he's going to have a chance of winning when he goes up for them. Good going forward. The last game and a half, I've really liked him, Anderson and Barnes down the left. I think it works really well. They combine together really nicely, and I think what you say there, he keeps the ball very, very well. Nothing fancy, keeps it simple when it needs to be. He will get better and better over time, hopefully now, given the injury situation, the fact that we're probably going to not see Tino Livramento and Kieran Trippier until at least, what month we're in? Until May.
If we're lucky.
You hope now that he's going to get a good run of games and he can just improve, because he needs that now after what's been such a stop-start season.
And I guess Eddie Howe might use Lewis Hall as the example to why he's not just going to throw youngsters in. He wants to build them up to the level where he knows they can perform at the highest level. What I did enjoy yesterday was, as you mentioned, you know, Elliot Anderson in front of him, and then you have Harvey Barnes as well. Anderson not afraid to shout some instructions, shout some orders at Lewis Hall, and Lewis Hall not afraid to give it out to other players as well. I think that's been missing in recent months, the leadership. You know, the voices, you know, you've only really had one or two, whereas now we're starting to see a few more come back, and that's great from two young lads in the team. In the comments, we've got John saying Alex Murphy should have come on in place of Dummett. We've got John saying, I thought Byrne was brilliant last night alongside Hall and Anderson. He wasn't too impressed with Sean Longstaff. We've got Les complaining about a tackle on Murphy by Tarkowski. We've got Les also defending Paul Dummett, saying it's ridiculous to suggest that he's cost Newcastle's season after that mistake. Les saying, will Murphy be fit for Saturday? You have to hope so. And Stephen says, is Eddie more worried about his tenure as manager by not playing the kids when he should be thinking in terms of winning the game? Think? Well, he's safe as houses, isn't he?
Yeah, you'd imagine so. And I don't think, you know, those individual substitutions are really going to have an impact on his future. I think it's just the Eddie Howe way. We don't see him, you know, opting for that really risky. I mean, maybe if Newcastle had been 2 or 3 and up last night, he would have said to Murphy, OK, you go on at left back. Maybe because it was 1-0, he wanted the experience.
I think the bigger picture is, isn't it? And this is something for whoever the new director of football is, working alongside Shaw Lowry, all being, of course, Steve Harp and the others, is we need to see these players getting first-team football.
Yeah.
You know, we need to see them week in, week out. I mean, currently, I think Minter's the only one getting regular first-team football out on loan. I'm not missing anyone. Makiel's not getting, getting anything, and that needs to be something that changes. So when you do send these lads out, you know, they're not going to get first team football at Newcastle. They can develop elsewhere and come back stronger, you know, the season after first team football. We've mentioned Lewis Hall. Bruno, superb. Good again. 16 of 19 ground duels, 94 touches, some wonderful passing. He was absolutely everywhere. I was really worried he was going to pick up a boot in the
league. Yeah, early in the game as well, where he was shouting at the referee.
His head a little bit and kept going. And maybe that's where we do just need a Dan Burn arm around the shot and say, hey, Bruno, come on, get away from it. And I think it was towards the end of the first half when Bruno kind of started to lose it a little bit. And I felt there was those 5 minutes or so when actually a lot of Newcastle players just started to lose the grip on the game in terms of keeping their concentration. There was one attack up the Newcastle's left when you had about four or five Newcastle players chasing one man down. It was like, no, you've got to keep your shape. But yeah, Bruno, superb again. And it you know, he looked gutted when he came off. He looked absolutely gutted. He handed his shirt to someone in the crowd, walked off. He looked devastated.
Yeah, he did. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was his 50th appearance of the season. He's had a long old campaign, hasn't he?
One more game to go before the yellow card.
Yeah, before Tottenham, yeah.
Is Tottenham the last one?
I think Tottenham is the last game that he's got to get through, I think. And then
he's
at
so
least
getting booked there, isn't he?
He's definitely getting booked at the weekend, isn't he? I mean, look, to his credit, I mean, can we even blame him for getting booked? I have to think, even if he gets booked Saturday, you've got to applaud him for going, what, 7, 8, 9
games?
Never thought he would get this far into it.
I actually think he had Decore to thank last night, because in that moment where he went after the referee, Decore stood in front of him, blocked him from going up the referee. I think he needs to be writing a thank you card to Decore.
Well, I was sort of joking with our colleague Lee Ryder last night, because Lee Ryder spoke to Bruno after the West Ham game and asked Bruno, you know, how have you managed to avoid the suspension? You know, how have you managed to walk this tightrope? And Bruno says, you know, I've just channeled my energy and focused on my game. And I literally turned to Lee last night and said, you do realise you've jinxed him now, and he's going to go and get a booting tonight. But thankfully, he came through unscathed.
He has looked a better player since he's had to focus his energy into not getting booked, I think. And there was a wonderful moment very late on where he just takes out three or four Everton midfielders in the centre of the park, you know, kind of weaves in between them and gets away. He's superb. He uses his body really well. I still would like him to eradicate from his game, though, where he tries to buy the foul, and especially when he's running back to his own box.
I thought that was a part of the game that you really liked, De Bruno's, where he does that, where he buys the fouls.
It keeps us awake at night.
I've got a friend who listens to this podcast who will be listening to this later on and screaming, because he was texting me last night in the group chat going, will Bruno stop trying to run out of his own box with the ball?
Does me nothing.
At the end of a game, when you're 1-0 up, just get rid of it. That's the one thing I think we'd like to see eradicate. But you saw last night, I mean, when he's in the centre circle and it was the 99th minute and he's...
That's good. Centre circle's fine. Yeah. It's
He's in his final third, yeah.
He was in the first half and he gets fouled just inside his own box. And it's like, you are betting on the referee giving that foul, because large part of the time, it's 50-50. Mm. You know, and we saw the referee last night giving... You know, not given fouls, the same kind of scenario, and he's just letting it go on. So I think, oh God, Bruno, just please stop it. Go forward, keep doing that, but don't go and run towards your box. I don't like it. Thank you. But yeah, brilliant again. Isak, 15 Premier League goals this season. A superb goal from him again, weaving in and out of the defence. A superb finish. What did you make of his performance?
Really good again. On and off the ball, he just offers so much. I think when Harvey Barnes plays him through on goal for the first goal, it's sort of got that feeling now where he's in that position. You know, he's just on the left-hand side of the box and he's running at the defender. You're thinking 9 times out of 10 he's going to score here. And when that ball went over the top and over the top of James Tarkowski's head, I just thought, okay, there's very little chance of him missing here. Took it well. Adds to the tally, one step closer to Shearer's record of 15 consecutive Newcastle games, which I'm sure he'll break. He's only got 9 more to go. Yeah, brilliant again. But I suspect we're going to have a little bit of a disagreement.
Well, I'm just going to ask the question of whether he needs to be more clinical in front of goal. Because there's been games recently, Man City, West Ham, Everton, where he's had chances at close range and he's not taken them. So I'm just wondering whether you think that's part of his game, whether it is the fact in the 6-yard box, he needs to be a bit more Gary Lineker-esque, or whether you think that's nonsense. He's got 15 Premier League goals this season. What are you talking about, Andrew?
Well, I've got some stats actually to show you and prove to you that I really do disagree with you, because as you mentioned, Alexander Isak has 15 Premier League goals this season, the same amount as Jarrod Bowen and Heung-Min Son. He's one behind Solanke, Salah and Watkins, and he's three behind Haaland, but he's played less games than Haaland and Salah. Now, on your point about him being clinical, he's got the best minutes per goal ratio, 106 minutes for every goal this season. Haaland's is 112, Salah's is 119. He has got the best conversion rate of any of the strikers that I've just mentioned. He scored 35% of his chances. Haaland and Watkins is 23, Salah and Solanke are 24. And he's also got the best shot accuracy of any of those aforementioned players with 67%. The closest of anyone in that list is Salah with 59. So if anybody's asking to be more clinical, they just need to look at those stats.
And what does stats prove? But come on, you can't deny the chances against City, the chances against West Ham, and that chance yesterday against Everton. They should be being in the back of the net, right?
Look, those are four or five examples in the last couple of games where you can point to and say, yeah, okay, look, City away, he had an absolute stinker. Nothing was falling for him. He should have done much better. The West Ham one, he obviously puts it wide. Is that the one you want about? From close range?
Yeah.
And last night, look, last night, that chance that he misses from close range, was that his fault or was that just unlucky? Good defender from Mikulenko on the line.
Don't get me wrong.
And also, right, when fair play, he's missing some simple chances close out in front of goal, but he's also scoring worldies in the same game.
Is that the point though? Like, he's scoring fantastic goals, but just let's score.
But he's scoring anyways. So can we really put too much criticism on when he's scoring amazing goals in the same game that he's missing?
Before people write in, I love Isak. He's absolutely brilliant. I'm very excited he's a Newcastle United player. I'm very excited that he's said about these Arsenal rumours. He's in response to them. I love playing here. I don't want to entertain these type of questions and rumours. It's not my position. I love playing. We have important games. There's no focus there on my future. I just want to do good for the team. He talked about, you know, he's here for the project. He wants to stay. Love that. All but committed to his future. Football, though, can change. You know, maybe, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. But there, he looks like he's here for the long run. Love that. I want him to be here for years. I just think he's missing chances, and which are very important to Newcastle in achieving European football. Scoring great goals, 15 Premier League goals is a fantastic tally, given he has had his own injury problems, given Newcastle have been decimated by injuries. You know, there's no one to replace him. Maybe he gets tired. There's no one to push him for competition. All these elements. He is brilliant, but I'd just like him to take a few more chances. He should have more than 15 Premier League goals.
If Isak hadn't scored in the last five or six games and he was also missing these chances, I'd be with you. I'd be concerned. But he's scoring every game. And yes, look, there might be chances that in theory he shouldn't be scoring, and actually he's missing the ones he should be scoring, but he's scoring goals. And, you know, timing-wise, you know, I'm sure many people have heard Roy Keane talking about Erling Haaland at the weekend, saying that he's a League Two player in terms of his build-up and what he can't do when he's not scoring chances. Alexander Isak is actually the full package. He scores fantastic goals. He can play out on the left. He's brilliant off the ball. He's brilliant when he's holding it up. He's brilliant at linking up. He is the whole package, and the stats, as I've just mentioned, prove he is the most prolific and clinical striker in the league this season. And all this talk of Arsenal and Tottenham and whatever being in for him for 100 million, double it, and you might get close to it. But I think he's more important than Bruno. He's more important than Botman. He's more important than everyone. He is the biggest asset Newcastle United have got at the minute.
And again, I totally agree with everything you've said there. And again, I'll say I absolutely love him. I think he's got more to come. I think he's always going to have more to improve on, as is every player.
How much does it take for Newcastle to sell him in your eyes?
Well, you're talking at least £80 million, at least
for his left foot. Yeah. What about the rest of it?
So what are you saying, 140?
Oh, I think. Everybody talks about Bruno's 100 million release clause, and you know what Botman would go for, and Isak for me is generally. He could end up being one of the best players the Premier League's ever seen. I think he is far and away Newcastle's biggest asset. I honestly think he would be the most expensive signing, and I would be gutted whatever price.
I mean, his all-round play is fantastic. The way he drops deep to get the ball, the way he does gravitate to either wing to help out. But in a way, does that also not present a bit of an issue? And going forward, Newcastle are going to have to try and find the remedy to a certain degree, because there's times when he does magical work out on the flanks and the ball goes into the box and there's no one there to aim for. Mm. And there's also times last night, Jacob Murphy put a superb ball in the box, but Isak was on the edge of it. Mm. And there's no one there attacking it. And someone asked what last night, who knows the game, he knows he's played for Newcastle United, said he's not a killer. He's not a killer. Mm. He's a kind of a second striker or at home on the flanks. And I would like to get your opinion on that. I'd like to get people's opinions watching live. What do you make of that? Because I can see that, I kind of subscribe to that actual train of thought. I don't think he's an out-and-out striker like a Callum Wilson, Alan Shearer to a much higher level. And I do think that part of his game is missing. He's superb. He's so important to Newcastle. But would he be more at home behind an out-and-out striker if Newcastle changed formation?
See, I'm gonna flip what you've just said there, and I see it as a positive. The fact you can do all of that, and actually, if you get your wish this summer and a third striker comes in or another striker comes in, there's absolutely nothing to say that Alexander Isak won't spend a lot of his time out on the right or the left next season. If he does go out on the left, then I feel for Gordon and Barnes, because how do you get in the team above him if he's playing out there? But everybody makes the Thierry Henry comparison because of where he plays, how he plays, but also Thierry Henry started out on the left and became this absolute clinical player through the middle. He then went to Barcelona and played out on the left again. And I see the same in Isak. I don't have any qualms with him leading the line at all. I do get what you mean about his positioning and how he does like to drop deep and move out of the flanks and channels to pick it up. But I see it as a positive. I think he can do it all, and I love him.
You love him.
Love him.
You and Sam Mullen and the Alexander Isak fan club, and yeah. 52,000 as well. And I am sitting there, by the way, ladies and gents. I just think, you know, every player has something to improve on. John says, I don't think I'd accept anything less. I don't think I'd accept 150 million to 200 million. I rate them that high. So we're talking 200 million plus for Alexander Isak. That would buy you a nice little reset this summer, wouldn't it?
And the rest.
I don't think he's going to go anywhere, though. Now, one player they will have a look at on Saturday is Tosin, centre-back, free in the summer. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst start the summer transfer window if they managed to announce Lloyd Kelly and Tosin, would they?
Yeah, look, there's going to be a lot of suitors for him. Did fantastically well when he was coming up through the ranks at Manchester City. A player that Newcastle have actually looked at in a lot of previous windows, and for whatever reason, you know, it never came off. Fulham did fantastically well to get a deal of that magnitude when he left City's youth ranks. These are the type of deals Newcastle people are looking for. We spoke on Monday's show about people turning their nose up about signing Bournemouth players, Fulham players. These free transfers in the summer with players of that quality are just, you know, absolute no-brainers, as I said the other day. And Tosin's one of those players again.
Hmm. And, I mean, towards the end of the season, what me and Aaron will do is, I think we'll do a little transfer special, maybe look at every team in the Premier League and see who would be on our wish list. I'm obviously not saying they're not going to go out and buy 20 players, but the point being, we always bang on about the fact there's so much talent towards the bottom of the league. I mean, you look at the way Nottingham Forest displaced Fulham. Morgan Gibbs-White, what a player, absolutely fantastic. And you've got other players in there who could make a difference. A certain Chris Wood is on absolute fire as well. The strange old world of football. Just finally then, we've mentioned at the start about how the feeling within the dressing room will be. Fulham, it is a big game. If Newcastle want to qualify for Europe, it's a game that they have to win, or do they not?
Look, you'd certainly hope they would. The table looks promising. Look, they're 4 points off.
Results went for their favour last night.
Again, two games in a row. That won't last forever. Look, Fulham are one of those really weird teams. They're banging form, especially at home. Newcastle, the result at St James' Park feels like a little bit of an anomaly, because obviously Jimenez got sent off so early. Game was absolutely killed. I don't think it's a must win, but you know how many times we're going to sit here and say Newcastle just can't string these results together. As I said at the top of the show, beat Fulham. You've taken 7 points from three tough games on paper. Good week.
It's just making sure that they get over that kind of mental block that impacts them away from home.
And it's just making sure also that they don't pick up any more injuries. That was actually one of the positives of last night, is that I know Lewis Hall went off and you had, you know, three or four players that weren't in the matchday squad, which we now have learned are going to be out for a long time. But every time a player went down last night, Jacob Murphy went down, you know, when he was really trying to shake off that issue with his Achilles, I thought, oh, he's absolutely gone for. Lewis Hall goes down a couple of times. Every time a player goes down now, I'm like, here we go.
So just to confirm what you're talking about there, Kieran Trippier not yet fit to play. He's going to miss Fulham.
Yep, Kieran Trippier will be out for Fulham, will be out for a couple of weeks. Tino Livramento, ankle injury, out for around a month. Miggy Almiron, knee injury, out for around a month. Now, just to get my conspiracy hat on for a second.
Kieran Trippier starts on Saturday.
No, I'm actually going to go the opposite and say, if Eddie Howe is saying that they're out for around a month, does that mean that they're out for three? And
he's just trying to, yeah.
So, as we said,
strange. Trippier was there though against West Ham. So what was he doing? What was he doing? Because he was in the tracksuit and everything.
Yeah, and weirdly as well, the club tweeted out a photo of him as well, didn't they, say Trips is here?
Has he smiled for that photograph and then tripped down the stairs on his way up the dressing room?
I mean, knowing Newcastle's luck this season, I wouldn't put it past that that's happened. I thought at the time when Newcastle had put that photo out and then he wasn't in the squad, I thought, oh, that's classic Eddie Howe mind games. He's just throwing David Moyes off the scent. But, you know, clearly something's gone on. He was initially meant to be back from his calf problem after the international break. He was only meant to miss two games. It's now looking like it's going to be 5, 6, 7.
And that's the issue. What really shone through last night was the squad depth. Yeah. We've alluded to it there. They haven't got the ability to change the game when they need it. And that is also going to impact how the players are feeling, because they know, you know, I'm blowing out my backside here, but there's no one to come on and replace this. I'm going to have to play 90 minutes, even though I can barely walk back down the tunnel.
And the fact that Eddie Howe only used two substitutes last night says it all as well. I mean, Sean Longstaff, again, looked like he was running on empty, and there was a lot of people saying, why didn't he come off for Willock? But I actually thought Arneson was, you know, looked absolutely gassed in that second half as well. They just don't have the men, you know, to come on and change the game anymore.
They certainly do not. Fingers crossed they don't pick up any more injuries. It is Fulham on Saturday. Check out the match preview on Thursday morning with myself and John Gibson. Thank you very much for tuning in. Head over to chroniclelive.co.uk for all the latest Newcastle United news. And for myself now, and we'll see you guys on Monday.